ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनमपि शचीपुत्रमत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमुरुपुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशं प्राप्तौ यस्य प्रथितः कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्देहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः परकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथन्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता शिवशाखान्वितांश्च। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Srila Prabhupada sometimes noted that during that he was in New York City when there was a power cut which went on for several hours after dark, and 9 months later there was a spike in the births, because what do people do when they don't have anything else to do? So similarly, so many people may die from this virus, but then the people are at home, what are they going to do? So they may make up for the old people dying, and a whole bunch of new ones will get born. Name 696 in Parasha Bhatta's rendition of Sri Vishnu Sahasranam is Tirthaka. Who makes Tirthas is one of the standard or most common translation of Tirthaka. I'm coming back to the Vishnu Sahasranam after quite some time, because I took quite some time to prepare this exposition on Tirthaka, and I want to do it in some detail, so I did quite some reading and this and that, and for other reasons. It's quite ironic that in Tirthaka, who makes pilgrimages places, it's quite ironic that I'm doing this during a time when all the pilgrimage places are closed down in India, all over the world probably. Yeah, I wanted to talk about this in some detail because pilgrimage has been an important part of my life, and it is an important part of any religious person's life, probably. There may be some religionists who don't believe in pilgrimage. Actually, I'll get through to that, who don't believe in pilgrimage at all. And there may be some people who just, they remain cloistered within their monastery, so they don't go anywhere, anytime. So it'll take quite some time to go through this one name. But even to discuss any individual Tirtha in depth would take quite some time. In Tamil, just a few years ago, a big volume, I think it was 9 volumes about this big, was published in a history of Sri Ranga. That was just the history, what to speak of the culture, and so many things. The maybe that was included in the theological underpinnings, the philosophical underpinnings, and so on. So the word Tirtha indicates purity and knowledge. Kara means one who makes, or a hand, just like we say karatal. Kara means hand, tal, beat, so to make a beat with the hand. Various renditions of this name have been given. I'll just give them briefly and then can discuss in more detail. name of Lord Vishnu, he who is the source of the holy waters. And water in Sri Vaishnava Tamil, Brahmin Tamil, is Tirtham. With the idea that, well, what is it? Any ordinary water is called Tirtha, is it? Any ordinary water. Not necessarily Charanamrita, any water. Drinking water. What about if you have a well in your house, pull up the water? That's also called Tirtha. Well, they wouldn't, if you use it for washing clothes, bathing, that's also called Tirtham, is it? Is that the idea? For bathing, you'd call Ganga to be present. Gange cha yamune chaiva. Jalam also, yeah. I just learned that the Smartas in Tamil Nadu call it Jalam. Anyway, the language is such that it helps us to remember Vishnu at every moment. I was just hearing a few days ago how almost everything in Sri Vaishnava Tamil is connected with Vishnu, especially the food items. They give some name. So he's the source of the holy waters who makes us cross over the ocean of samsara. He makes the various ways by which we can come to him, he makes them for us. The touch of whose hand is purifying. There are so many examples of that. Dhruva Maharaj was touched by Lord Vishnu's conch, and then he was able to speak so many beautiful prayers, philosophical glorifications. By the touch of Krishna's hand, Kubja, Trivakra. In Bhagavatam, we'll see the name is given Trivakra. The hunchback girl became straight and beautiful in her appearance. He who has provided simple steps to access him through his various incarnations. He who has Shastra in his hand, or who makes Shastras. Tirtha is the first among the 10 sannyasi names in Dashanami of Shankaracharya. See if we can remember. Tirtha, Puri, Van, Giri, Parvat, Bharati, Sarasvati, Sagar, Ashram, Aranya. That's it. Not in order, but I got them. So the 10 names, it's also the only sannyasi title given in the Madhva Sampradaya. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he gave these names, plus 100, there are others, 108 sannyasi titles he gave, some of which are not common elsewhere, outside of the Gaudiya Math. As far as I know, we don't get names like Paramadvaiti, Gabhasta Naimi outside of the Gaudiya Math. So all these uses of the word Tirtha. Tirtha can mean a holy place. That's generally understood meaning of the word holy place. Holy person, holy scripture, holy water. What do they all share? What is it about them that makes them a Tirtha? They're all holy places that by coming in contact with, we become purified. Anyone who approaches a Tirtha, whether a holy place, a holy person, holy water, holy scripture, these Tirthas exist in the world to purify us. It's Krishna has given this facility to help us to become purified. Therefore, he's called Tirthakar. The idea is of crossing over. Tirtha, another meaning, a secular meaning you can say, is a ford, which is a word in English which in nowadays if you say ford, people think of a car. But originally the word ford, after which the man Ford, the surname Ford came, it's a place in a river which is shallow enough that one can easily walk through the river. So that's called a ford. It's a place where it's easy to cross the river. So the idea is that the Tirtha is a place or a person or water or holy water or a scripture that makes it easy for us to cross over. Now, what do we cross over? That will be seen later as we come. People take it differently. Most people think we go to a holy place to cross over the distresses of our life so that we can live happily in this world. But the real facility of a Tirtha is to help us to cross out of this world altogether. And there are certain formalities that we have to undergo to take advantage of the Tirtha. Anyway, if we go to a holy place, that's our benefit. If we come in the contact of a holy person, that's to our benefit. But if we go to the holy place and we follow the requisite rituals and austerities, offering something, then that helps us to cross over. Then we take advantage of that. A ford in a river, if you just go to one side of the river, you're in a good position to cross over, but if you don't do the requisite activity of getting in the water and going across, it may not be easy also, because the river may be just fordable. It may not be very easy to ford. If the water's up to the chest and there's a strong current, it may be difficult to ford, to walk over, to walk through. Similarly, with a holy person, one should approach tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattvadarshinaha. One should approach with humility, service attitude, making relevant questions. Minimally, that is understood in Indian culture up to the present day. Minimally, one should bring a gift. Something, one should offer something. Minimally one lemon or one coconut. One should bring something, or a flower. One should bring something to offer to the sadhu. by offering even a flower, it establishes that I have come here with respect and with affection, and it's expected that one will get something. Generally, people will come for blessings. They want blessings for their material life. But the real benefit that can come by approaching a holy person is to hear his instructions and then to follow them. Tirthas, generally considered, the Tirtha. The holy place that may go by different names like Kshetra, Kurukshetra, Prabhasa Kshetra, Divya Desham, the holy places. They're not all specifically known as Tirthas. But these holy places collectively, the Dhams, of course, I'll speak about all this, Krishna willing, in the upcoming days. I very much like to visit them, although I don't always, because you could spend your whole life visiting them, and we have other services to do also. Srila Prabhupada gave us service to assist in his mission of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. So for that purpose we may have to not visit holy places all the time, or maybe not live in a holy place all the time. So I like to visit regularly, and all the major holy places of India I have visited, with the exception of Kedarnath. I visited Badrinath, but not Kedarnath, and not Yamunotri, not Gangotri, not Gomukh. Many Vaishnav holy places, the most famous ones I visited, all many Shiva Kshetras also, many places even connected with Shakti I visited, but I will get through to this. So I like to visit all these holy places, because in such places the real spirit of spiritual India is still maintained. Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur, who himself visited so many holy places in the course of traveling and preaching throughout this land, he proposed one of the books that he wanted to write, but which he didn't, because there were many books he suggested he would like to write, but he didn't get round to it. One of the books he wanted to write, and some articles came in the Gaudiya magazine at that time under the rubric of Paramarthik Bhugol. Bhugola Vidya, or just Bhugol, that can be said, geography. Check if that's an original Sanskrit word. It's used in Bengali and Hindi. If it's in Sanskrit, that would be very telling, because it gives the idea of roundness that could be thrown into the mix in the great debate. Is the earth flat or round? Spherical. It's not, whether it is round is not disputed, but is it spherical? So Paramarthik Bhugol, spiritual geography. He wanted to write that, such a book. So the real spirit of India is there. Otherwise India everywhere has become so materialistic and westernized, and there are still some people who are maintaining their culture as best they can. And many of them reside in the holy places of India. It's not that they're trying to maintain, it's not specifically that they're trying to maintain the culture, but they're keeping up their spiritual and dharmic ideals, which means that they maintain the culture, because even though you can chant Hare Krishna in a rock and roll tune, and you can dance in a modern style to the chanting, the culture is, the original culture is more cultured than all of this. And there are people who still want an attempt to live that culture, knowing that it is conducive for their spiritual practices, and that all this commercialization and materialism in the name of spiritual life, it's not the real thing. Materialism in religion, that's there everywhere, all over the world, in India no less than anywhere. But spiritual life, which is the ultimate point of religion, if that becomes commercialized, then it's lost. The spiritual purpose is lost. A quote from Srila Prabhupada's purport to Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 13, Text 9. In the holy places of India, like Vrindavan, Haridwar, Jagannath Puri, and Prayag, there are many great devotees, and there are still free kitchen houses for persons who desire to advance spiritually. Some interesting points here. Srila Prabhupada said there are many great devotees in Vrindavan. Haridwar, We don't expect to see devotees much in Haridwar. Sadhus, yes, but not, it's not so much a devotional place. Maybe Srila Prabhupada is referring to devotees of Ganga. Definitely there, all along the Ganga we'll find devotees. And especially, most famously, in Rishikesh, where they have the nice Ganga Aarti every evening. And in Varanasi also, every evening they have Ganga Aarti. Maybe some other places also. Jagannath Puri, Prabhupada mentions, and Prayag, which also isn't... When we say Prayag, what do we mean? It means a confluence of rivers, and there are so many Prayags. As we go up to, from Haridwar, Rishikesh, up to Badrinath, there are so many Prayags on the way. But when we say Prayag, that generally refers to Prayagraj, which refers to what was called Allahabad for many years, where Ganga, Jamuna, and Saraswati, unseen Saraswati, they merge their waters together. So there are many great devotees there. And there are still free kitchen houses for persons who desire to advance spiritually. In other words, yeah, so pious people who are not on the level of being a sadhu, but they're pious and they want to serve sadhus, so they arrange facilities, they give money, a businessman, especially the... well, that used to be done by the kings, but more recently, especially the Marwari community of India, many of them who are very rich, they donate liberally for chhatras, they're called, the places where food is given daily to sadhus. In Rishikesh, you'll see, in Dwaraka, there's just little, small rooms for sadhus to live, and they can live there as long as they like. They can stay for the rest of their life if they like, or they can stay one day, 2 days, and go on to somewhere else. And as long as they're there, they'll get a place to stay and some food. And like this. So this is all arranged for them. A pilgrimage, Tirtha, Tirtha Yatra. Tirtha is, the holy places are approached by Tirtha Yatra, which is translated in English as a pilgrimage. Yatra means, has several meanings, one meaning is a journey, so a journey to a holy place. And usually, or it's generally considered, it'll be some long distance to go to the holy place. And that long distance, especially in the old days, going by foot, you're not supposed to go by a vehicle. Nowadays, everyone goes by vehicle. But they made stop, the bus stand is often outside or just at the edge of the Tirtha, so people can at least walk from the bus stand into the Tirtha. But in the old days, you're not allowed to go by bullock cart, only walking. Walking is the only allowed way to go. Or if you're too old to walk, then we have just like this, what's the name, Shravan Kumar, he used to carry the parents. That may be done. There is a man at the present time, he's probably stopped now because of the lockdown, who's taking his aged mother all around the holy places of India, carrying her like this. So that's allowed if one is very old. And even you'll see, just like at Barshana, or at here close by at Sholingar, so many steps to go up. So you can also hire someone to carry you up in the dhol. What's that called? Palanquin? It's not, palanquin means you have to have four, at least two people carrying it. Dhol it's called. What's it called in English? Is there any word for it? I don't know what the word is. Is there any word in English? Does anyone know? Something like a palanquin. So you can be carried. But actually that should only be for people who are infirm and very old. It's not really proper if you have two legs in good order to have someone carry you up. Srila Prabhupada, when he went to Barshana when he brought disciples, that must have been around 1970, I guess, he went, they hired that to go up to the temple on the hill. And nowadays, they just like at Tirupati, most people go by bus, they don't go by walking up. Still, quite a few people go by walking, but most people go by bus. Tirumala. But we can imagine previously how by walking, that still goes on, that Dindi Yatra to Pandharpur every year. And some people go, if they live quite fairly close by, they go every Ekadashi, they go by walking to Pandharpur, Maharashtra. Only by walking, then no one goes by bus there, as far as I know. So we can imagine, especially if you're coming from a long distance, because along the way, and you may be going with other Tirthayatris also, other pilgrims, and there's a whole meditation, we're going there. Usually a pilgrimage place is associated with a particular deity. There may be exceptions, just like Prayagraj. Well, of course it's associated with Vishnu, but it's not, there's no major temple. Of course Bindu Madhav is there, but as in Varanasi, but it's not so much a place of a particular deity, but most of the holy places are connected with particular deities. But there's a meditation on that deity, and then singing songs, and on the way one has to perform austerity. So there is a whole meditation as one going, and then as one gets closer and closer and closer, feeling of expectation. We have the description in Chaitanya Bhagavata of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with his four companions. The names are given differently in Chaitanya Bhagavata and Chaitanya Charitamrita. He left them behind at one point because Nityananda broke his sannyas danda. So he went on, and then when he came to Ataranala, the bridge with 18 arches, then from there, that's where people coming to Puri, and most of them come from the north side, the Bengal side. And there's a description a British man made at the time of Rath Yatra. He wrote about this, that on the road from Bengal to Puri, which is not exactly the same route, it's a little different now. People used to come by same route Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took, Chhatrabhog. They'd come along the right bank of the Ganga to Chhatrabhog, cross over the Ganga, and then they'd come and they'd make a little detour to visit Kirchura Gopinath. But he said the road for dozens of miles is completely packed with pilgrims. So many people would go. And actually, many people before the Indian independence movement, Swaraja movement came up, many people, including Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he appreciated that the British had made a situation of peace in the country so that people could go on pilgrimage. Whereas previously, before the time, there was
There were periods of peace during the Muslim rule also, but maintaining law and order, so I appreciate it, but so many people went. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his ecstasy, because from a taranala you can first of all see the chakra above the temple of Jagannath. So that was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ecstasy, that now I'm all, after walking so many days, now I'm in sight and very soon, and then his ecstasy as he came in the temple, it's not described, but presumably he took bath before he went in the temple. That, maybe not, because sannyasis don't have to follow all the rules. But generally people take bath just close to the... Well, it wasn't there at the time, but the Ganga Mata Goswaminis, she made that little lake, that lake came for her. But there's Indrajumna Sarovar, the Narendra Sarovar, so he must have taken bath, then he came, and then his ecstasy just became to, and he just collapsed, he fainted when he took darshan of Jagannath. So, pilgrimage journey, going towards God, and the whole idea of pilgrimage is, it, especially for those who are in the devotional line, it means going towards God. Approaching as a in humility, you don't go on pilgrimage with dressed in fine clothes and eating fine food with a big retinue, pomposity, no such thing. One has to go in great humility. That one has come as a supplicant. That I need something from you. I'm in need of something which you can give. So this word pilgrimage, it also serves as an allegory of the journey of the soul toward God. In other words, one may not be exactly on pilgrimage, going towards a holy place, but one's whole life is supposed to be a pilgrimage. In this regard, one of the most famous classic books in English literature is called The Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan, who was a Methodist preacher, who for his preaching he ended up in jail, and he wrote this book in Bedford Jail. So it's a famous book written in very simple language, which was one of the reasons it became popular, because previously the priests in Europe, they would learn Latin and they would give their sermons in Latin, which the ordinary people couldn't understand. And they were on a level of knowledge far above the ordinary people. And they were somewhat aloof from them. So one of the appealing factors of the Protestant Reformation in Europe, and there was a similar thing going on in India around the same time, the bhakti movements within India around the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. John Bunyan came a little later, but he wasn't at the beginning of the Protestant Reformation. The bhakti movements started bringing the knowledge of the Puranas and Ramayana and Mahabharata in the local languages. Most famously, tremendously religiously and culturally influential for generations was Tulsidas's Ramcharitmanas. And here in Tamil Nadu, the Kamban Ramayana. In Bengal, there was Kritivas Ramayana, but Rama Bhakti never really picked up in Bengal. So the Mahabharata in local language, the Bhagavatam in Telugu, there's the Potana. In Bengal, the whole Bhagavad wasn't rendered into Bengali, and as far as I know, until Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did that. And later Srila Prabhupada's with elaborate commentary. But there were summaries of it in Bengali verse, or the whole story was given there in Bhagavat Acharya's work, the Krishna Bhakti Tarangini, and a summary of the 10th canto, which by Gunaraj Khan, Sri Krishna Bijoy, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appreciated so much. So the culture was being, the religious message was being disseminated in the local language, as in Brijbhasa, there was Suradas and others of the Ashtachap of the Vallabh Sampradaya. They sung songs in Brijbhasa language, and they made poetry and sung that. And there was Mirabai and so many others. Kabir was there, who was put things in popular language, but he wasn't a devotee. But the point was that bringing it to the people so that the ordinary people could partake in religious activities, they could feel their connection with God, so that everyone could live their life as a pilgrim. Everyone's, which Krishna of course states in Bhagavad Gita, Swakarmana tamabhyacha siddhin vindati manavaha. All by manavaha, Krishna means all men, everyone. And he includes the Shudras, because before that he gave the descriptions of the occupations and the propensities of the four orders. So he said, everyone, if they do their work and worship me, worship him, actually, he says in this regard, they can all achieve perfection. So the bhakti movements in India and in the West, although the Protestant, it's not exactly the same, because Protestantism was almost like anti-bhakti. Anyway, it's a very complex thing. But it's not exactly, but the point, anyway, I was talking about John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, which is, it talks about how you have to keep straight on the path. I still remember, I read it years and years ago before I joined the movement. How it's very, gives very graphic metaphors, how you have to stay on the right path. If you stray off the path, then you get in trouble. There may be someone saying, oh, the road ahead is very rough. You just, because the whole idea is you have to stay straight on the path to go to the kingdom of God. But someone says, oh, the road ahead is very rough, but don't worry, we made a little diversion. But the pilgrim who remembers to stay on the path, he just goes on the path, even though it's rough. And someone says, you can just come this way, it's easy to go, and it'll get you to the same place very easily. And the people who go, they get lost. There's some trap on the way. Or it takes you back to where you came from, or takes you to hell. Like that Kirtanananda Swami did a Vaishnava version of this, which I can't remember the name of. So you can see that all religions have pilgrimages. It's not only in quote-unquote Hinduism. And in Sikhism, of course, Amritsar is very famous, and there are so many other places which are holy places for Sikhs, including in present Pakistan and in Patna and Paunta Sahib and so many places. In Buddhism there shouldn't be, but there are. In Buddhism there's nothing to do except just be, let it be. But anyway, there are so many holy places connected with Buddhism. I don't know about now, but the There used to be very few flights in and out of Burma. One of them was a twice a week flight to Gaya, Rangoon to Gaya. Why to Gaya? An obscure town somewhere in North India, because that's the place of what? Buddha's birth, enlightenment, and nirvana. Of course, the place of his birth is disputed. Some people say it's in Nepal. Lumbini. The main park in Bangkok is called Lumbini Park, named after that. So all religions have their pilgrimages. Srila Prabhupada often mentioned, not in his books, but in his talks about Christians bathing in the River Jordan, which is in Palestine. He used to cite this when describing the verse, Yat Tirtha Buddhi Salile Na Karhijit Janesh Vabhigyeshus Agheva Kokara. He many times referred to this. So people, they go on pilgrimage, and those who can afford it, they go from America or wherever to visit the holy places connected with Jesus, namely Bethlehem, Nazareth, and Jerusalem. These are the three main places. Damascus in Syria. But so they're all on the Christian tourist circuit. And of course, in Islam, one of the most important or compulsory, if you can do it, which once in your lifetime one should go on Hajj to Makkah. And when Hazrat Muhammad, PBUH, founded Islam, it wasn't to go from Medina to Makkah wasn't a big thing. But if you have to go from Indonesia, and you're on the average Indonesian income, not so easy. But anyway, that's very important. And we see in India Muslims with this henna in their beard. What does that mean? It means they're a haji, and they'll give their name will be Haji so-and-so, because that's an important thing, to go on pilgrimage to Makkah, especially at the after. Well, if you can be there for the whole of Ramadan, very good. And then for the Eid at the end. And then you have to offer charity, so many rams you give for slaughter, and package bits of meat and send them off to poor Muslims all over the world. For the last few decades in America, there's been a quasi-pilgrimage for New Age types, the Burning Man Festival, in which they make a temple out of wood in the desert, Nevada desert, and put some figure of a man, and it goes on for 8 days or something, and at the end they burn the figure of the man. And before they do that, people put on a piece of paper all the bad things they want to get rid of, all their phobias and bad habits and bad thoughts, and it's supposed to burn up. It all burns. It's like a religious, everyone watches from it as it gets burned up in the night in the desert. Of course, not so easy just to put a piece. It would be great, huh? You say, I want to get free from all lust, greed, anger, envy, illusion, just put a piece of paper and burn it. Well, it's not so easy. You have to do some serious sadhana and praying to get rid. But the idea is there. Burning Man. That's also there in the Ravana, gets burned up. And the Ram Lila, the Vijayadashami, they burn Ravana. That's in North India. I don't think they do in South India. Holika also gets burned up on Holi Day, this demoness. In England, they have going on up to the present time. Guy Fawkes was the name of someone who wanted to blow up the Houses of Parliament. But he got caught, and so he was burned to death. And ever since then, on November the 5th, I think it is, November the something in England, they make a figure of Guy Fawkes and burn in a bonfire and have fireworks and all things like that. It's not exactly a pilgrimage, it's secular. Srila Prabhupada noted that in Moscow they had stopped all the religion, practically, although some show of religion was allowed, but Lenin's body, which is of no use to anyone, not even the worms, because it was, what's the word, mummified, not exactly. Immolated? No, that's not the word. I can't remember the word. They make with oil and this and that to keep it. So there'd be huge people from all over the USSR. If they came to Moscow, I doubt if they'd come just for this. But there'd be huge lines starting from early morning to take darshan of Lenin's dead body. Big demon. But it's religion in reverse. Prabhupada saw the long lines. What's that? Oh, they're queuing up to see Lenin's dead body. But the communist state necessarily took on the trappings of religion, the social trappings of religion, pilgrimage, and then they tried to make the state like God. You have to dedicate for the state and for the party, for so like this. And then they'd have parade, May Day parade of all the tanks and the show of might like this, and then everyone salutes. So it has the trappings of religion because of the psychological effect is supposed to be there. So it's not just in India, it's pretty much all over the world. And even you'll find in Mecca is supposed to be the main pilgrimage place, then Medina for the Muslims. But you'll find in India also there are so many holy places that Muslims go to. In Ajmer, that's the huge, so many people come to Ajmer to visit that dargah, which is like a samadhi for the dead body of that Chishti, what's his name? Can you remember? Some saint, Muslim saint there. And mostly Muslims go, but Hindus go also. Because for Hindus, there's no strict boundary. I'll talk about that some other time. If you can see God everywhere, in everything, under everything, over everything, outside everything. So if there's something good, you can go along with it. So, but it's everywhere that people... Srila Prabhupada noted that even primitive people, if they see a big mountain, they'll worship that. And in one sense, there's no harm, because big mountain means there's a personality there also. Seeing the personality. Due to our biology classes, we see rivers and we see water. We see hills and we see stone. But previously, people would see rivers and they would see, here is Ganga. Not just some water, here's Ganga, person, Ganga. Here is Kaveri, the goddess. They don't just think it's just some water, H2O. They don't think like this is the she is here personally. This is her very form. So all the religions have pilgrimage. And if you don't have pilgrimages per se, if you try to get out religion, then you'll have some Burning Man festival, or you'll have Lenin mausoleum, or people go to, I remember that word, they go to some sports stadium, like a pilgrimage, like, oh, this place, Wembley Stadium, that's the place where the England soccer team lose most of their games. As far as I know, maybe they win some of them sometime. Maybe if they play, I don't know, Ireland or something, they might beat them. So it's like a holy place. Oh, the FA Cup final takes place at Wembley. There's actually that book, that the Human Zoo, written by Desmond Morris, and he showed how, he gave that as an example, how at the FA Cup final, which I won't bother trying to explain, but it's a big game in football, how they symbolically, the manager marches out onto the pitch, followed by the captain of the team, and they, it's all very symbolic, the way they do it. It's like a very grave thing. So it takes on the trappings of a religion. And at the football games, the people sing songs, and every team has their own song. If you don't put your worship to God, or to some demigod, or some imagined God, then practically people worship secular figures. They have a whole bunch of deities in Madame Tussauds Wax Museum. I haven't been there. It's in London. There are so many places in London, museums, and people from London never go there, only the visitors go there. So they look just like real people, and they have all the figures of famous people, so you can go and take darshan of them. When they put Hitler in, then they had to put it at a distance because everyone would spit. So it's the opposite of a pilgrimage. But the idea, oh, you can go and see, oh, I don't know what, Margaret Thatcher, she must be in there. Oh, just like seeing her in person, real. Oh, how wonderful. Or whatever famous people are there. Previously, it would be that going to on pilgrimage, it would, nowadays, yeah, how would you go on pilgrimage to Vrindavan from New York City before coronavirus hit the world? Well, you get a flight from New York to Delhi, hire a taxi, most people do nowadays. We used to go to Delhi bus stand and get a clunk, clunk, clunk bus to Mathura. There were once or twice a day direct to Vrindavan. Or you could go on the train and get a tonga from Mathura station. Anyway, that's how you go. But previously people, they would go with great difficulty, walking, and it may be over difficult terrain. You'd want, which means you have to climb up and climb up hills, or go over hills. There was a risk in many cases. I was saying that many people appreciated the British because to a large extent they got rid of all the disturbance, they established law and order, because previously going on pilgrimage was very dangerous because you had to have money to go. There, along the way there would be places where free food was given, but not everywhere, and places you'd have to pay. And along the pilgrimage paths there were tax booths, you'd have to pay the toll booths, so you'd have to bring money, and it could be dangerous because bandits would attack and take all the money. So it was risky, it was dangerous. People, often they would go when they were older, when at least one son was married and had a male child, then it's time to think about leaving home. And you can go on pilgrimage. You may come back, you may not. Going on pilgrimage to Badrinath, it's considered generally, for an old person, if you go on pilgrimage to Badrinath, generally understood you won't come back. If you even make it, going up the difficult path, very dangerous path, walking, it's not just dangerous because it's high with a rough road and no fence, which is still there, as these crazy bus drivers go. They go far too fast around the corners, and if they just happen to miss the turn or one of their tires blows out, then you'll be in the paper the next day. 56 people died, so and so and so. But it was dangerous also. There were tigers and lions and bears and snakes and all kinds of things. And then there could be rocks falling down. So it was very dangerous. Plus, to walk up and so far and up, 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 up. I mean, not many places even to drink water or get food, so it was very great hardship. And it wasn't expected that all people, if they make it up there, then they weren't expected to come, be able to come down again. It takes so much time to go, and if by the time you're coming back, if you are coming back, then it can get very cold, and you don't survive the cold, and so on, and so on, and so on. But still, people had an ambition that at least once in my life I should go to Tirupati, here in the south, to Sri Rangam, to Prayagraj, to Vrindavan. They had that ambition. And some they would go once a year if they lived close by, just like out of the present time in Pandharpur in Maharashtra. People go, many people go once a year. So that ambition that, okay, I'm leading my life, I'm doing my farming or doing my running my shop or whatever, just engaged in the, but at least once a year, or at least once in my life, let me visit a holy place. Let me do something in this human life. A daily puja is there. Every Hindu used to do daily puja. Nowadays, hardly anyone does. It's something they would do. When they open the shop in the morning, if you come and you want to buy something, they won't sell it. First of all, they have to at least do a 1 minute offering incense. And the first money they take in the day, they put to their head. It's coming from God. I don't think they do that. If you open the shop and then they still do that. The first money they put to their head and then they put it in the till and they go on like that. So it's a very religious culture. And pilgrimage was a necessary part of that. Going to Jerusalem from Europe means crossing the sea. That Mediterranean Sea is generally quite placid. Also, going to Rath Yatra, and that's the time of the that comes in the rainy season. So crossing the Ganga, there's many rivers to cross. Rup Narayana River, it's a big river in Bengal, Orissa border. Many rivers, Suvarnarekha, and so many rivers are there, Mahanadi and Katak. And so it can be very dangerous to cross. And usually at the pilgrim season, they'll pile so many people in the boats. They'll take many risks to go. In the desert, Makkah nowadays you can go, but previously if you can go, everything's air conditioned, but previously people have to walk through the desert, and if the Ramadan comes in the hot season, it's extremely taxing and difficult, and people may die also in such heat. They may go on pilgrimage with the idea of giving up their body, that I'll leave my body in a holy place. Anyway, I'm old, I have to die soon. The Jerusalem has been the scene of so many fights. We're going on pilgrimage to Jerusalem, but first of all, we have to kick out the infidels. The Muslims are ruling it, so the Crusades in Europe, over several hundred years, the armies would go from all over Europe to try to liberate Jerusalem. It's a holy war. The holy war was done more by the Christians at that time. So, in this way, the pilgrimage places are taken very seriously and very importantly by the people for whom that is the manifestation of God's mercy on this earth. That God has made this place that we can go to. It's a special place. It's not an ordinary place. In the vision of a materialistic person, Vrindavan or Mayapur or Sri Rangam, it's just another place. But in the eyes of a devotee, they know that this is not an ordinary place. This is very, very special. I'll leave it there for now. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, who created so many tirthas all over the world. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa tarupyas chakipasindubhya vichapatita nam pavane bhyo vaishnave bhyo namo namaha.